unfolded test of compass proficiency. Wu had given him some basic instructions. You started by aligning the outline of the arrow with the magnetic pointer inside. That meant you were facing north. Each time the pointer crossed into the lines of the arrow, the compass would vibrate, so you could tell north without having to look down at it. With Wu's modern battery-powered compass, the vibration was strong enough that you could feel it through your gloves. But Uncle Wade's antique compass worked differently. For starters, there was always a tiny hum from the clockwork gears inside. When the needle crossed into the arrow, the vibration was almost imperceptible, like a tiny down feather landing on your palm. Even with his gloves off, Arlo could barely feel it. He nearly gave up in frustration. Then he thought of the scenes in movies where the hero had to keep trying and failing hundreds of times until they finally got it. It didn't matter what the it was. Karate, dancing, lightsabers, the sequence was the same. Usually there was a cranky teacher pointing out the hero's faults and a song playing in the background. Arlo didn't have either of these things, but he did have all day with nothing better to do. So to practice, Arlo would close his eyes, spin around, and try to feel north. Once he'd made his decision, he would open his eyes and check whether the arrow lined up with the pointer. The first 20 times, he was wrong. The next 20 times, he was also wrong. Plus, he was getting dizzy. He decided to alternate spinning left and spinning right. The following 20 times, he was still wrong. But one attempt was actually pretty close. He decided to give it one more run of 20. On the second attempt, he got it right. Then he missed 4 in a row. Then he got 2 correct, back to back. He started to worry that he was cheating somehow, that the sunlight coming through his eyelids was giving him an unfair advantage. He had read how some insects navigate by checking the angle of the light, which is why moths flutter endlessly around porch lights. So to avoid any chance of insectoid interference, he fetched his ranger neckerchief and tied it around his face, like a blindfold. After another 20 attempts in complete darkness, he was getting it right more than half the time. More importantly, he was starting to understand why he was sometimes wrong. The compass didn't just vibrate at north. It also responded at 2 other points in the circle. These were slightly fainter buzzes, like echoes. When he really focused, he could tell the difference between northerly vibrations and the other ones. Finally, he got 10 right in a row. Declaring victory, he went inside and made himself a peanut butter, potato chip, and jelly sandwich to celebrate. Finding north was only step one. In order to complete the dark walk, he would need to be able to follow a specific path while blindfolded.
"The tricky thing is keeping your paces even," Wu had said in his initial instructions. "Once you start thinking about them, they always get longer or shorter. So you have to be able to count your steps without really being aware of them. It's harder than you'd think."
Arlo started by kicking a line in the snow with his heel. Then he started walking, pacing, 10 steps up the driveway. He turned around and walked back. Perhaps because of the slope, he made it to the line in only 9 steps. So he tried again. And again. Sometimes 10 paces took him too far. Other times, not far enough. The key, he discovered, was not looking at your feet, but focusing on the angle of your legs. Arlo imagined them as a pair of scissors, making sure he was opening them the same amount each time. After he had reached the starting line on exactly 10 paces a few times in a row, he tried again, blindfolded. In some ways, this was easier, because there was nothing else to focus on but the angle of his legs. He got it right the first try, his left heel landing exactly on the starting line. He took another break. This time he had a can of soda with his peanut butter sandwich. It was almost 3 o'clock. He'd spent nearly 5 hours pacing around the same stretch of driveway. Now it was time to put all the skills together. He started with the triangle, which Wu said was the easiest. In order to complete it, he would need to make 2 sharp turns and then end up at exactly the place he'd started. After first lining up the compass arrow with the pointer, Arlo pulled the blindfold down over his eyes. Then he started walking 10 paces forward. He quickly left the flat section of driveway, trudging through snow up over his knees. Despite the shifting terrain, he felt he was doing a good job keeping his paces. Now for the tricky part. The turn. In order to make a triangle, he needed to pivot 120 degrees. To do that, he held the compass in his palm and started twisting the dial. With each tiny movement, it clicked. Wu said he had to go 12 clicks to the right. He counted carefully, holding his breath. He felt like a safecracker trying to break into an invisible vault. Once he was pretty sure he had gone 12 clicks, he started to slowly turn his body, feeling the compass for the tiny vibration indicating north. That was the trick. North was always north. So once you lined it up again, you knew you were facing the right direction. It took almost a minute before Arlo sensed he had aligned the compass. He took another 10 paces forward. He was relieved when he felt the packed snow of the driveway. At least he was headed in the right direction. He accidentally started to take an 11th step, but caught himself in time. Once again, he twisted the dial 12 clicks to the right, then tried to find north. But something was different this time. North wasn't where it was supposed to be. Thinking maybe he had spun in the wrong direction, Arlo slowly turned in a full circle. He kept waiting to feel the tiny vibration. Then the compass started humming. He could feel it quiver in his hand like an electric toothbrush, much stronger than ever before. This didn't feel like north. This was something altogether new. He nearly took off the blindfold, but decided to keep trying. He turned a little to the left, a little to the right. The source of the hum was definitely a single direction. Arlo tried to picture which way he was facing. Given where he started, he was most likely pointing away from the house, towards the road. Then he heard a dog barking. It was frantic, ferocious. Arlo pulled down the blindfold, squinting in the light. He was, indeed, facing the road. Cooper was barking at the forest, which wasn't so unusual. Except, Arlo realized, I shouldn't be able to hear him. The ghostly dog's bark was loud and clear in the cold air. Closing the compass, Arlo took a few steps forward. The dog glanced back at him, then continued barking at the forest. Its tail was down. A ridge of fur stood up along its spine. "What is it?" Arlo asked. The dog couldn't answer. It didn't need to. Something was coming out of the woods, a dark shape moving quickly through the trees. Arlo recognized it by its gait, even before it reached the sunlight. It was a massive black horse, but not an ordinary horse. Ordinary horses don't have horns like a ram, or glowing red eyes, or flames curling out of their nostrils. This horse had all of those things, and it was charging directly at him. Arlo knew he needed to run, but his feet didn't respond. He was frozen with fear. He could only stare. He could hear its hoofbeats in the snow. Its mouth opened, revealing double rows of sharp teeth. Then its mouth opened even further, splitting a seam along its jaw, 2 petals of razory flesh. Arlo wondered if it could swallow him whole. The horse was nearly upon him when it suddenly fell, crashing sideways into the snow. Cooper had pounced on it, ripping at its throat. The 2 mystical beasts were fighting savagely, snapping and scraping at each other. Arlo wanted to watch, but he knew he had to run. His feet finally agreed. He sprinted for the front door, slipping a few times along the way. He had just reached the porch when he heard a sickening yelp and knew that Cooper had lost the fight. Arlo fumbled with the front door, but he finally got it open. He stepped through and slammed it behind him. He turned the lock and backed away. 2 seconds later, a massive weight slammed into the door. The hinges strained, but held. It slammed again, and again. The beast was using its horns as a battering ram, but not making any progress. Then the banging stopped. Arlo could hear hooves clattering on the wooden porch. He wasn't sure what the horse could be doing. Pacing, maybe? Arlo started slowly backing up the staircase. Suddenly the door blew open, ripping off its hinges. The horse had kicked it with its hind legs like a mule. The beast twisted back around, spotting its prey. Arlo scrambled up the stairs, heading for his room. He could hear the horse following him, but it was having trouble. It was too big for the staircase. Each step was a struggle for the creature, its hooves sliding across the treads. Shutting the door to his room, Arlo pushed in the little button on the doorknob to lock it. He knew the latch was nearly pointless, designed to keep someone from accidentally walking in rather than fend off a determined supernatural beast. JC's room has a proper lock, one that could actually... The clattering on the stairs had stopped. The horse had reached the upstairs hallway. Arlo could hear its hooves, muffled by the carpet. Pum, 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 pum. Its fur scraped against the walls as it walked. Glass broke. Arlo assumed it was a light fixture knocked off the ceiling. Then the hooves stopped. The creature was right outside the door. Arlo could hear it breathing. And he could smell it, too. Fireworks and rotten eggs. It seemed to know Arlo was inside. Maybe it could smell him, too. Arlo turned to the window. It was frozen shut. He banged on the frame with the heel of his hand, trying to loosen it. The horse slammed against the door. The impact wasn't nearly as loud or as strong as it had been downstairs. It can't ram the door, Arlo realized. It doesn't even have room to turn around. The best the horse could do was smack the door with the sides of its horns. Arlo had some time. He finally got the window open, shoving the sash all the way up. The blast of cold air invigorated him. He had been sweating in his parka. The horse gave up banging on the door, but it was still there. Arlo could hear it moving and breathing. The beast was trying to make another plan. But what could it really do? It couldn't turn around, and even backing down the hallway would be difficult. Then Arlo noticed light spilling under the door. It began as a faint glow, but steadily grew brighter, as if a dimmer switch were slowly being turned up. Then a shaft of white light blasted through the old, unused keyhole. More light seeped around the edges of the door. Whatever was happening in the hallway, it was much brighter than the sun outside. Arlo retrieved his escape rope from the bottom drawer. As he tied it to the radiator, using two half hitches, he saw the shadows on the wall start to move. They slowly climbed the wallpaper to the ceiling, where they began to pool together. Arlo watched as the inky darkness rippled like an upside-down puddle. This was not good. Checking that his knot was tight, he tossed the coil of rope out the window. He had just started to climb out when suddenly the horse descended headfirst from the darkness above, crashing down on Arlo's bed. Its coat was glossy and wet. Spotting the boy, its mouth flared open, exposing 100 jagged teeth. Arlo half-jumped, half-fell out the window. Grabbing the rope tight, he caught his weight but nearly pulled his arms out of their sockets. His face smashed against the side of the house, his legs flailed, trying to find the rope. He looked up. The beast reached its head out of the window with a guttural scream. It craned its long neck, snapping at him. Panicked, Arlo let go of the rope and fell. The prickly bush underneath his window broke his fall. Covered in snow, it crumpled down to absorb the impact. His parka protected him from the thorns. Lying on his back, Arlo blinked, surprised to find himself unhurt. He stared up at his window, where the beast was still futilely reaching at him. It howled in frustration. It was far too large to fit through the opening. Arlo struggled to get to his feet. He looked back up to the window. The horse was no longer there, but a bright light was beginning to glow. Arlo knew he needed to go, but where? He could run down the road, but the nearest house was half a mile away, and the horse was faster. The forest was closer. Maybe he could climb a tree. But the snow was deep. It would slow him down. And the woods were where the beast came from. Arlo's best bet was to hide in the house. Maybe the basement. Unless... the workshop. Arlo hadn't seen his uncle all day, but he hadn't seen him leave either. His truck was still parked in the driveway with snow on the windshield. He was probably out there working on the big order for Jackson Hole. But what if he wasn't? To get to the workshop, Arlo would have to run all the way around the house. If he got there and it was locked, he would have no place to hide. He looked up at the window again. The light was gone. The beast was no longer trapped in his room. Where was it? Arlo couldn't begin to understand its shadow magic. But he was certain it was somewhere, and it was coming. Arlo had to make a choice. He chose the workshop. He ran. Nearing the driveway, he tripped. It surprised him more than it hurt. He picked himself up and kept running. Turning the corner, he saw what he feared most. The workshop door was shut. Padlocked. He stopped in his tracks, looking for another option. The laundry room door was usually kept locked because the latch didn't work right. The woodpile offered him no real protection. And even if he got to Uncle Wade's truck, he didn't have keys to drive it. Then he heard a splintering crash coming from the second story of the house. His eyes went up to the unfinished section, where he saw movement under the blue tarps. Suddenly, the beast leaped through the plastic. Arlo saw it all in slow motion, the horse falling through the air. It landed in a gallop, cutting a wide circle to head straight at him. With no better option, Arlo kept running for the workshop. As he got closer, he saw the padlock was actually open, dangling from the hasp. It was unlocked after all. Even if Uncle Wade wasn't there, he could get inside. Arlo yanked on the door, trying to slide it open. It was much, much heavier than he expected, moving only a few inches at a time. But that's all he needed. He squeezed through the gap and started rolling the door shut. The gap grew narrower and narrower. He could hear the beast's hooves. It was screaming in fury. The door shut with a satisfying thud. Arlo had made it inside. He stepped back, catching his breath. As his eyes adjusted to the darkness, Arlo Finch wondered if he had been better off outside. 21. The Workshop. Names are funny things. They can evoke an idea about the nature of an object that may have no relation to the item itself. For example, Arlo's first bicycle was a Zephyr Fireball Max. He had picked it out at the store with his father and insisted on keeping it in his room rather than the garage. The bike was sleek and fast, built for speed. That summer he spent every afternoon racing down the dead-end street near their house in Philadelphia. He imagined himself winning the Tour de France on it one day. It wasn't until he went back to school in September that he saw an identical bike locked next to his on the rack. It had the same tires, same frame, same everything. Except it had a different name. The Mountaineer. This was a slow but sturdy trail bike, designed for rocky paths and steep slopes. Yet it was the exact same bike. Only the name had changed. Uncle Wade had called the building out back his workshop. The name had made Arlo think of Santa's workshop, or the show on public television where the man with suspenders made drawers with dovetail joints. In his mind, Arlo had pictured his uncle working at long tables with various taxidermy animals in different stages of assembly. A half-stuffed eagle over here, a rabbit being glued over there. He imagined the workshop to be cluttered, but comfortable, perhaps even cozy, much like the house. This was incorrect, a misconception based on the term workshop. If Arlo had named this place, he would have called it the Scary Dark Terror Shed. because that would have been accurate. To his left, a wall held rusty blades of every conceivable shape and length. Some looked like they had been taken from various machines. Shredders, plows, lawnmowers. Others seemed to have no purpose other than being terrifying. The blades hung from hooks in neat lines stretching up to the ceiling, where more pieces dangled from wires overhead. To his right, a lopsided cabinet held hundreds of disassembled dolls. They seemed to be sorted into categories. Heads, legs, torsos, arms. But the individual pieces were packed randomly on overflowing shelves. Dirty doll faces stared at Arlo with unblinking eyes. Straight ahead, he could see dim light coming through dirty plastic sheeting draped from the ceiling. It seemed to serve as an entrance to the back of the shed. Everything about this space was so unsettling that he almost forgot about the monster trying to kill him. Almost.
Uncle Wade? Are you out here?
Arlo could see his breath in the narrow crack of light spilling through the door. There was no answer. If his uncle was here, he was on the other side of the plastic sheeting. Psyching himself up, Arlo carefully pushed it aside, revealing a larger room beyond. A wave of warm air hit his face. His uncle was sitting on a stool with his back to him, giant headphones over his ears. He was busy working on something, picking up and setting down tools and brushes. A curl of smoke rose from a soldering iron. An electric heater glowed at his feet.
Uncle Wade!
Still no answer. Arlo could hear the music spilling out of the headphones, loud heavy metal, all thrashing drums and distorted guitars. But there was another sound, too, one that reminded Arlo of the wooden xylophone from third grade music class. His gaze drifted up to the rafters, where five dark wooden boards with Chinese writing hung from wires. A circular hammer swung wildly in the middle, striking the boards, each of which played a different note. It was like a wind chime, except there was no wind. Arlo had no idea what was making the hammer swing so erratically.
Uncle Wade!
This time he really shouted. Still no answer. The music in his uncle's headphones was simply too loud. Seeing no other option, Arlo finally tapped him on the arm. Uncle Wade was so startled he fell off his stool, crashing into a series of cardboard boxes. He finally landed on his back next to a stuffed beaver holding a toothbrush.
Sorry,
Arlo offered his hand to help him up. Uncle Wade refused it, pushing himself to his knees.
You know you're not supposed to come out here. That's the one rule.
I know, but
no buts, no exceptions.
Wade stood up, untangling himself from the headphone cord.
This is my sanctuary. This is where I do my art.
I know, it's just...
With a tish-tish, Wade shushed him, listening. He looked up to the wooden boards dangling above them, suddenly concerned.
How long has it been doing that?
I don't know, said Arlo. What is it?
It's an alarm. Something's here that shouldn't be.
He pushed past Arlo, headed for the front room.
I know! That's why...
Wade was already through the plastic sheeting. Arlo didn't want to follow him, but he didn't want to be alone either. He caught up to his uncle just as he was starting to slide the heavy door open.
No, no, don't! It's out there!
Arlo blocked the handle, trying to stop him.
It's a monster. It came out of the woods.
His uncle relented, listening as Arlo continued.
I was out front, practicing with the compass, your compass, and then it started to vibrate.
That's what it's supposed to do. That's north.
It wasn't north. It was something else. And then this thing, like a horse but not a horse, came charging out of the forest. Cooper tried to stop it, but...
Arlo suddenly realized he hadn't heard the dog's bark since the first encounter.
I think it killed him.
Cooper's already dead. You know that. He's a ghost dog.
But he was fighting the monster. I saw it.
Uncle Wade's eyebrows scrunched together, his expression skeptical but not dismissive. He nodded.
All right, let's take a look.
Grabbing a shovel as a weapon, He slid the door open before Arlo could stop him. Wade squinted in the crack of sunlight. Cold air spilled around the edges of the door. Arlo braced for impact. But it never came.
"There's nothing out there."
Wade pushed the door open wider so Arlo could see. Uncle Wade was clearly going blind because the horse was no more than 20 feet away, pacing back and forth like a lion at the zoo.
"You really don't see it? It's right there," Arlo pointed.
Wade shrugged.
"I don't see anything, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Lots of eldritch things are basically invisible. That's why you don't see photos of them."
"Then why can I see it?"
"Same reason you see Cooper, I guess. Maybe it's your weird eyes."
Arlo knew he didn't mean it as an insult.
"What's it doing?"
"It's just walking around. Why isn't it trying to get in?"
"I got serious wards on this building. Not just the alarm, but real totems built into the walls. Cost me a pretty penny. But it keeps the bad stuff out."
"So we're safe? We can just stay here and wait for it to go away?"
Wade shook his head.
"Waiting's no good. What happens when your mom comes back, or your sister? Just because they can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. We're gonna have to find a way to deal with it."
"You mean, kill it?"
Wade scoffed.
"Good luck with that."
He headed back through the plastic doorway. Arlo followed him, nervous to leave the shed door open. He found his uncle rooting through a particularly deep pile of junk on one of the side tables, searching for something. He didn't seem as panicked as Arlo thought he should be.
"Best we can hope for is to abjure it, send it back where it belongs."
"You know how to do that?"
"Not precisely."
He pulled out a book. Wrong one. He tossed it aside.
"But in general?"
"General theory, sure. First, we gotta know what we're dealing with."
He finally found what he was looking for. It was an old book, warped with water damage. Arlo instantly recognized the cover. Coleman's Bestiary. Uncle Wade had had one all this time.
"Now, you said it's a horse?"
"Like a horse, but with horns."
Wade skimmed through the index in the back of the book.
"What kind of horns? Elk, rhino, unicorn?"
"There are unicorns?"
"What, you think people are just making them up?"
"I don't know. I mean, what else is real? Dragons? Giants?"
Uncle Wade snapped his reading glasses together. They connected with magnets at the bridge of his nose.
"Let's focus on the thing trying to kill you, all right?"
"It had round horns. They curled back on themselves."
Arlo traced the air with his fingers.
"And its mouth opened super, super wide."
"Sounds like a nightmare," said Wade, flipping through the book.
Arlo nodded.
"It was."
"No, I mean a nightmare. Two words. Mare is another name for a horse."
Arlo nodded. Nightmare was the perfect name for the creature. Wade had a hard time finding the page he was looking for. Then he realized several of the pages were stuck together. He carefully peeled them apart, ripping the paper in a few places. He turned the book to show Arlo the illustration.
"Is that it?"
It was just a pen and ink drawing, but it was definitely the same creature.
"That's it. That's what's out there."
Wade read the entry to himself in a whispered mumble. Arlo didn't catch much of it. His attention drifted over to the workbench where he could see what his uncle was working on. It wasn't like any of the standard taxidermy animals in the dining room. This was much more elaborate, featuring a badger with a crown slumped back and a throne made of doll arms. Three squirrels dressed as jesters were juggling for the badger king's amusement, while a pigeon with a sword kept watch. Even in its unfinished state, the piece was extraordinary, equal parts creepy and beautiful and funny. Arlo pointed to it.
"That's really cool."
"Oh, thank you. Trying something new."
Then, back to the book.
"We need to find some salt."
According to Coleman's Bestiary, shadow creatures, like nightmares, could only cross into our world through moonlit lakes deep in the Longwoods. The magical water from those pools clung to their fur, protecting them while they traveled.
"That's why it looked so glossy," thought Arlo.
Wade read aloud from the book.
"Once the water dries, or is tainted by salt,
the creature is immediately dispelled.
So we just have to dump salt on it.
Exactly.
Do you have any salt?
Not out here. Only salt you're gonna find is in the house. There's some in the kitchen by the stove.
But that meant leaving the safety of the scary, dark terror shed. Arlo waited for his uncle to volunteer to make the run.
Neither spoke for a few moments. Then Wade nodded.
Way I see it, you're better qualified to do this, he said. You can see it. I can't. Plus you're smaller and can run faster.
I can't run faster than a horse.
True. That's definitely true.
But Wade seemed to be forming a plan.
Let's see if we can get you a head start.
Before Arlo could respond, Wade ripped the plastic sheeting down. Arlo could now see directly out the open door, where the horse was still pacing, waiting for them to come out. But his uncle couldn't see it.
It's still there, right?
Arlo nodded.
Then let's send you out the back.
Wade pulled a table away from the wall, sliding boxes to reveal the wood behind. He plugged a circular saw into a heavy orange extension cord. It whirred as the blade spun.
You're going to cut a hole?
A little one. You're pretty small.
He knelt down to start cutting.
Won't that mess up the wards? The ones protecting us?
Huh. Maybe. Never was quite clear on how these mystical things work. Suppose you could run out the front.
Arlo cut him off.
It's okay. You can do it.
He watched as his uncle sawed through the wall. If the wards had fallen, the horse didn't seem to know it. The beast was still pacing back and forth on the snowy driveway. With two more cuts, Wade had made an opening the size of a doggy door. On the far side, the snow was deep and crusty, but sunlight was peeking through the top few inches.
This ought to work. Now, you're going to want to run around to the back patio door because...
The laundry room door is locked.
Exactly. I know for a fact the sliding glass door is unlocked because I went out there this morning.
Uncle Wade never locked the house, only his workshop.
Once you're inside, don't stop until you've got the sodium chloride in hand. That's the scientific name for salt.
How do I use it?
Book doesn't say, but I suspect you can just throw it on the horse. You'll know if it works, because if it doesn't, you'll be dead.
There was no faulting Uncle Wade's logic, but Arlo wished he could be a little gentler in how he said things. Arlo got on his belly, preparing to squeeze through the hole. Worried that his parka would get caught, he took it off. Freezing was the least of his worries.
Think like a squirrel, said Wade. They just get that nut and go.
Squirrel, Arlo thought as he exhaled. Be a brave squirrel.
You want me to give you a shove? Asked Wade.
Arlo nodded. That might help.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Uncle Wade pushed. Arlo dug with his arms, swimming through the snow. In just 3 seconds, he was outside in the blinding sunlight. He scrambled to his feet and ran as fast as he could. He didn't look back. He didn't have to. The horse shrieked as it spotted him. Racing along the back of the house, Arlo passed the laundry room. The patio was in sight. He nearly slipped as he reached the sliding glass door. He yanked the handle. It didn't budge. Locked.
JC, he thought.
She hated when Wade left things unlocked. Any rando could just walk in. She must have locked it before she went off with Benji. The beast was charging straight for him. He had no choice but to run. He cut hard around the corner of the house, knowing the horse would have to circle. He could hear the hoofbeats. It was close. Rounding the next corner, he was at the front of the house. The porch was just ahead. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see the horse gaining on him. Arlo raced up the steps, through the busted-down front door. Hooves on wood. Another shriek. Arlo could feel the creature's breath. It was right behind him. He cut right, dashing through the dining room for the kitchen door. The horse was slower inside, clumsy. Its size worked against it. Arlo made it into the kitchen. He knew what he was looking for, a blue paper canister with a metal tab. Wade had said the salt was by the stove. But there was nothing like that there. He whirled around, checking the countertops. Just then, the horse crashed through the swinging door. Arlo backed away. There was still the bathroom. Maybe he could squeeze out through the window. Then he saw it. The salt shaker. It was on the kitchen table, next to the pepper. It wasn't the canister he'd been searching for, but at least it was salt. It might be enough. Unfortunately, there was a monster in his way. The giant creature was squeezing through the door. What would a squirrel do? Arlo thought. They were always facing bigger predators. Most times they ran away. But what did they do when they were cornered? They used their size to their advantage. The horse was now all the way in the kitchen. As its mouth flared open to bite, Arlo saw his chance. He dove between its legs, scampering underneath the kitchen table. Its rear hooves nearly smashed his hand. The beast reared around, crashing into the chairs. The table shook. Arlo saw the pepper shaker fall and smash open on the floor. But the salt shaker was still up there. Reaching blindly, Arlo searched the tabletop. He passed over the napkins and the sugar bowl. The table shook again as the horse turned. Suddenly, Arlo felt it. A glass rectangle with a metal top. He grabbed it and pulled it down. The salt shaker. Arlo smiled with relief. The monster leaned down on its haunches, trying to get to its prey. Slime dripped from its jagged teeth. Arlo scrambled back for the door, heading into the dining room. He sprinted out the front, twisting the cap off the salt shaker. He jumped the front steps, racing across the snow. Uncle Wade was standing in the driveway, carrying the shovel like a club. "Did you get it?"
"I got it!"
Arlo stopped and spun around to look back at the house. The horse was charging out the front door, leaping from the porch. Arlo poured the salt into his hand and dropped the shaker. He had to wait until the beast was close enough. Too soon, and the salt wouldn't hit it. The monster lowered its horns as it charged. It was going to ram him. Arlo felt his heart in his throat. Some of the salt was slipping between his fingers. Did he even have enough? The horse was 40 feet away. 30. Arlo stood his ground, defiant. 20 feet. 10. Arlo threw the salt. It fanned in the air like playground sand. The creature leaped. It looked like a fist trying to smash him. Arlo didn't flinch. The beast hit the salt spray and exploded in a thunderclap of smoke. After the boom came a pop and a crackle. For a few moments, the inky vapors hung in the air, still holding the shape of a horse. Then they settled, falling as black ash on the white snow. The beast had been dispelled. His ears still ringing, Arlo looked over to his uncle.
"Heck yeah, I saw it!" shouted Wade. "Flash! Boom! That was awesome!"
22. Repairs. Uncle Wade leaned on his shovel.
"We should probably try to get stuff cleaned up before your mom and sister get back."
Arlo agreed. The biggest concern was the front door, which lay flat in the entry, ripped from its hinges. His uncle used a tube of epoxy to glue the frame back together. It smelled like melting plastic and vinegar potato chips. Arlo helped him hoist the door back into place, tapping the pins in with a hammer. While his uncle worked on reattaching the lock, Arlo traced the beast's path through the house. Each step had left a hoof print of cinders and ash. The wooden steps were easily swept, but the shag carpet upstairs required the ancient vacuum cleaner. He ran it back and forth, never sure if it was actually picking the soot up or just grinding it in. Either way, the carpet eventually returned to an even color. The kitchen was easily tidied. To repair the pepper shaker, Wade provided a different glue, one he assured Arlo wasn't poisonous. You had to really look to see the crack. The hallway light fixture was hopelessly broken, however. They swapped it out for one in the linen closet. It didn't look anything like the original, but Wade said that didn't matter.
"No one goes around looking for what's different. They're too wrapped up in their own business."
Arlo soon learned he was right. When JC got home, she went straight to her room without commenting on the hall light, or the dirty carpet, or the faint dents in the front door. As long as it didn't mess with her routine, the house could be on fire for all she cared. As his uncle finished a few last tweaks on the front doorknob, Arlo spotted the headlights of his mother's car turning onto the driveway.
"What do we do if another monster shows up?" he asked.
Wade snapped his toolbox shut.
"I've got a buddy who can put some wards on the house proper, but I figure you ought to keep that salt shaker handy, just in case."
Arlo's mom parked and switched off the ignition. Uncle Wade headed back to his workshop. At that moment, Arlo realized how few words he had actually heard his mother and uncle exchange. They were less like siblings and more like reluctant roommates. They stayed out of each other's way. As his mom headed up the front path, she paused. She looked over at Arlo.
"Something you want to tell me?"
What was it? What did she know?
She pointed over to Arlo's escape rope, still dangling from his window. In all the tidying up, he had forgotten to put it away.
"I was practicing my knots." That wasn't technically a lie. Those two half-hitches had saved his life.
His mom shook her head, more tired than angry.
"Just please be careful. That's a big drop. I don't want you getting hurt."
Arlo nodded.
"What else did you do today?"
He thought back, suddenly realizing how eventful the day had been, even before the monster tried to kill him.
"I figured out how to use the ranger's compass. It's really hard, but I think I understand it now."
As he was closing his curtains before bed, Arlo thought he saw movement down by the road. His first instinct was to find Uncle Wade, but then he remembered hearing the truck driving away after dinner. Wade had presumably gone to see his friend about installing new wards on the house. That meant, if something was out there, Arlo would need to investigate it himself. He grabbed his flashlight and salt shaker. He'd discovered a spare in one of the kitchen cabinets, and slipped quietly downstairs. He was already in his pajamas, so he put on his boots and his parka. The front door opened silently. If anything, it worked better than before. The snow crunched under his feet. The night was much colder than the afternoon. The wind made his ears ache. He should have worn his hat. Arlo swept the flashlight across the shadows. Nothing but trees. He made it all the way down to the road. Whatever he'd seen was gone. Or, more likely, was all in his imagination. Just as he turned back to the house, he saw it. A shape rushed at him, low to the ground. The light passed right through it. It was Cooper. The ghostly dog limped a bit as he walked, but seemed otherwise unhurt. He was as undead as ever. Arlo held out his hand, but Cooper ignored it. He was back to his normal, endless routine. Arlo smiled.
Good boy.
23. The Bonfire. For the next few weeks, nothing attempted to kill Arlo Finch, which was frustrating, because he was really prepared. Over Christmas break, he had made a list of 16 creatures in Coleman's bestiary that could be dispelled with the salt he always kept in his pocket. He had attached a carabiner to his escape rope, bringing his window exit time down by 7 seconds. He had even started doing push-ups every night, in case it came down to a hand-to-hand struggle. Instead, his closest brush with death came from a post-holiday cold that was passed around the sixth grade like the class guinea pig on weekends. He only missed one day of school and no exams. His fever barely broke 100 degrees. Arlo would never admit it, but he was growing a little disappointed in whatever forces had conspired to kill him. He could see it in his friends' faces, too. Every morning they were happy to see him, but also a little surprised.
"Nothing?" asked Wu.
"I nearly got hit by a car, but it was mostly my fault. I wasn't looking."
Indra tried to remain optimistic.
"Accidents are the most common cause of death for young people. Maybe they're trying to make it look ordinary."
"It was Mrs. Mays just now in the parking lot. If they wanted my teacher to kill me, they'd have her assign another research paper on the Fertile Crescent."
But on the third Friday in January, Arlo suspected that this might finally be the day. It was the weekend of the Alpine Derby. the only camp out of the year that spanned both Friday and Saturday nights. Since they were going straight from class to the mountains, they'd worn their uniforms to school. Indra and Wu endured endless questions from Merrilee Myers about each of their patches and the significance of their pentagonal shape.
"Sometimes I dream about the number 5," she said. "And when I wake up, my goldfish is staring at me."
At recess, Arlo practiced his knots and compass work with Indra and Wu. After lunch, they raced to the library for one last look through Coleman's bestiary. Mrs. FitzRandolph had gotten so used to them asking for it that she left the drawer unlocked, provided they each promised to check out one actual book without monsters in it. Arlo chose My Side of the Mountain. He had always wanted a trained falcon. When the bell rang at 3:05, they went straight to the church parking lot with their backpacks. An hour later, they were hiking to their campsite, digging out to set up their tents. Connor triple-checked the wards, but Arlo felt remarkably safe even without their protection. Unlike a normal campout, this weekend there were 30 patrols from 8 different companies up on the mountain. Everywhere he looked, he could see rangers and wardens cooking by lantern light. He saw snap lights, snowball fights, and flaming marshmallows on sticks. If something wanted to attack him, there was no way it could sneak up. Plus, it would have to get through a lot of innocent people first. That was a grim thought, Arlo admitted. But comforting. A roaring jet of flame shot 50 feet into the air, so hot that Arlo made sure his eyebrows hadn't burned off. Then the fiery column split into 3 glowing strands, the sections bobbing and weaving around one another to form a braid. The 300 assembled rangers cheered wildly. The opening night bonfire was an Alpine Derby tradition, but tonight's entertainment was unprecedented. Arlo watched the 3 wardens standing at the edge of the fire. As they moved their hands, the flames followed, flowing like molten glass. The warden closest to Arlo was a bearded man with suspenders. He seemed to be the leader, nodding directions to the other 2.
"How are they doing that?" asked Arlo.
"They're firecrafters," said Indra. "Elemental magic. Super advanced and dangerous."
Wu leaned in. "I heard they were all bears back when they were in Rangers. They teach them that at the secret camp."
Arlo hadn't considered that many of the wardens were likely former rangers. He'd thought they were all just ordinary parents. Once the braid was complete, the bearded warden squeezed his hand into a fist. The 3 strands of fire fused at the top.
"All right," he shouted. "We've done our part. Now it's your turn. Rangers, snap lights. On 3.
All around Arlo, rangers raised their hands, including Wu and Indra. Arlo decided he would try as well.
1, 2, 3!
Hundreds of snap lights shot from the crowd. As they rose, a strange gravity bent their path until they formed a swirling ring around the pillar. New snap lights continuously added to the shape, which kept growing brighter. Wu launched one that made it to the pillar. So did the twins. Indra got 2. Arlo kept snapping, but he couldn't get anything to happen. He tried with his left hand as well. Thinking maybe his hands were too dry, he licked his fingertips. Still nothing. No spark. No light.
"What am I doing wrong?"
"Nothing," Connor said. "It will just happen when it happens." That was easy for him to say as he snapped a dozen lights in a row. Frustrated, Arlo put his gloves back on. He looked back at the firecrafters. The bearded man seemed to be straining, fighting to hold on to the fiery pillar like it was a vicious dog on a leash. No one else seemed to notice. They were all too busy shooting snap lights. Arlo followed the man's gaze to the top of the column, where the flames were starting to shift. They stretched and flattened, reaching over the top of the ring. It almost looked like the head of a snake. The bearded man was now clearly struggling. Arlo could see him sweating. The other 2 wardens looked over, concerned. Now the snap lights themselves were starting to drift, pulled from their orbit. Some went up, tracing the outline of an alligator's snout with the horns of a goat. Other lights fanned out to form glowing wings. Arlo could see it clearly. It was a dragon. He said it in unison with a girl standing beside him. He looked to his left to find Riel. Everyone else had vanished. The two of them were standing at the deserted bonfire, staring in awe at the massive flaming dragon suspended above them. It didn't move. It simply burned. Yet Arlo sensed it was somehow alive.
"It's sleeping," Riel said. "It's been sleeping for centuries."
"How did it get here?" asked Arlo.
"It made this place. This is its dream."
"Then how did we get here?" asked Arlo. Riel looked over.
"We found our way. That's what makes us so valuable."
Arlo could see the fire reflected in her mismatched eyes. As he looked back to the dragon, he could feel Riel leave. Or maybe he had left her. If this was all a dream, he was waking up. The wardens were back at the bonfire, fighting to control the flames. Arlo could see real panic, yet all around, the rangers were cheering wildly. They assumed the fiery dragon was part of the show. The bearded warden nodded to the other two, signaling them to hold it still. Then he clasped his hands, aiming them at the center of the flames. He flicked his fingers apart. The dragon exploded into thousands of tiny points of light. They descended like fireflies, fading into the night. All around him, Arlo heard the rangers cheering. Wu was the loudest of them all.
"That was awesome. I want to be a firecrafter."
"Obviously," said Indra. "You're already a pyro."
Arlo knew he needed to tell his friends about seeing Riel, but he wanted to know something else first. As the patrols headed back to their campsites, he found the bearded warden talking with a group of other adults. He waited until they finished, then went up to the man as he was lighting his lantern. The warden's hand was trembling as he held the match.
"You didn't mean to make the dragon, did you?" asked Arlo.
The bearded man looked over. His eyes narrowed, sizing Arlo up.
"Fire's a tricky thing. It surprises you sometimes."
He blew out the match. 24. The Sprint. They were winning. At the front of the sled, Arlo couldn't see how close the other patrols were, but he knew Blue was ahead. They had taken the lead at the midpoint, swinging wide around the giant totem pole to keep their speed up. Red Patrol had gotten there first, but got stuck in the turn. Connor had predicted it when they scouted the course that morning. "By the time we get to our heat, 20 other patrols will have carved up the snow." That was no problem in the straightaways. In fact, the flattened sections were faster. But you wanted clean powder for the turn. So Blue Patrol stayed on the outside and let the others get jammed up in the ruts of previous runs. Arlo could hear Russell Stokes shouting at his red teammates while they repositioned their sled. Even Green, with its jingling sleigh bells, was struggling, caught behind two surprisingly strong patrols from Niederland Company. While the others were jammed up in the bend, Blue was already headed home. All the weeks of sled practice were paying off. Mr. Henhow was performing perfectly. Not that it was easy. Arlo's lungs burned. His legs strained, but he kept running. They were going to win. The finish line was 20 yards away. 15. 10. Then he heard it. A whoop. A scrape. Pounding footsteps. Russell Stokes was suddenly right beside them. Then he was passing him. Red Patrol was passing them. Arlo was running faster than he had ever run in his life, but it wasn't enough. Russell's hand broke the toilet paper finishing line ribbon. The back of the red sled crossed before the front of the blue sled. There was no question, no debate. Red had won. Blue came in second. The moment they crossed the line, Arlo collapsed on the snow, staring up at the bright blue sky as he caught his breath. Every nerve was twitching.
He was hot and cold simultaneously. His stomach itched from where his t-shirt was rubbing. He wiped his eyes. It was sweat, not tears. He was pretty sure. At the corner of his vision, he saw Russell Stokes. He was leaning on his knees, catching his breath. He traded a few high fives with his buddies. Then Russell noticed Arlo watching and held his fingers in an L against his forehead. Loser. Connor wasn't disappointed, or at least he did a good job of pretending not to be. Look, we came in second in our heat. We beat Green Patrol, which is amazing.
We should have beaten Red, said Wu. We were ahead.
Yeah, and they were faster, said Jonas. Look at them. They're all jocks. They run track and play football. We can practice all we want, but they're always going to be faster. There's no way we can beat them. You're right, said Connor. We can't outrun them. But remember, the sprint only counts for 10 points. We've still got all the stations, plus spirit and sled judging. We can still beat them.
We'd have to be perfect, said Wu.
Then let's be perfect, because they won't be. Think about it. Are they better than us at knots? No. How about signaling? No way. Julie and Jonas are unmatched. Connor was right. The twins were scarily good at signaling. It was as if they were communicating psychically. Wu is great at fire building. They're not going to be able to boil water faster than us. Arlo had seen Wu go from a single scrape of flint and steel to a roaring blaze in less than a minute. Wu always knew exactly when to add more kindling and just how hard to blow. He called it his dragon breath. And nobody is better than Indra at map reading, said Connor. Red Patrol is going to get lost at some point, I guarantee. That will cost them time.
We could cross the finish line first, said Indra. That alone would make up the points we lost.
Guys, we can do this, said Connor. Seriously, we can win. With nods and bitten lips, the patrol was coming around. He had sold them on his vision. Until...
You forgot Arlo, said Julie. What's he good at?
Arlo could feel them all staring, judging, trying to think of something nice to say. He had been happy to be overlooked. The truth was, he wasn't particularly good at anything. Spirit, said Connor. He's our mascot. He's going to win this for us. Wu punched him in the shoulder. Arlo smiled. Let's practice our yell, said Connor. It's gotta be flawless. They lined up. Arlo was on the end because he was the shortest. Connor shouted. One! The twins shouted. Two! Wu and Indra shouted, Three! Arlo shouted, Four! Clap your hands, stomp your feet, Blue Patrol just can't be beat, faster than a snowshoe hare, stronger than a grizzly bear, both tomorrow and today, Blue Patrol will lead the way!
25. Knots. The Alpine Derby was designed to measure a patrol's competence in 6 fundamental outdoor skills, which went by the acronym SCRIFT. Signals, knots, rescue, identification, fire, and teamwork. Each skill was the focus of one station along the Derby course. While patrols could prepare in a general sense, such as practicing their knots and first aid, they had no way of knowing a station's specific challenge until they arrived. Only when they checked in with the station captain would they learn what they needed to do.
Last year for teamwork, we had to build a bridge over a ditch and get everyone across, explained Connor. Which would have been easy, except they didn't give you enough logs. The trick was that you had to wait until another patrol got there and share logs with them. Green Patrol was the first to figure that out. To do well, patrols needed to be fast and flawless. The maximum score for each station was 10 points, but time penalties and other deductions made that hard to achieve. Last year we got a 3 in signals. We just couldn't do it. Patrols kept passing us. While the Derby was meant to measure 6 skills, a 7th factor played a major part. Luck. Patrols were required to visit the stations in the order specified on their route card.
yet some were nearly a mile apart. If you draw a bad route card, you can end up backtracking a lot. It slows you down. With sled judging complete, they'd received 9 out of 10 points.